Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour, and today is Friday, December 10th, 2022. As always, we're grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or through the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people in using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever encountered. These tools are available absolutely free through the tireless efforts of Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice on the website at whyagain.org. If you go to that website and you click on the two words that say start here in the upper left-hand corner, it will take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. His book is titled, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And that chapter of the book contains a narrative description of an explanation of the primary tool in this work. That tool is called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet. And it's a tool I've been using to great effect for over 18 years now to improve the quality of my life and most of my relationships and to turn any negative emotional experience I have into part of the infallible guidance system that each and every one of us has been given. You can also download the actual worksheet process itself. Simple PDF file, click the link, download it, print it off, copy it as often as you'd like, and use it over and over again absolutely free. You don't even have to put your name on a mailing list or put in any credit card information. Just click the link, download it, and start getting to work. You can also go to your app store and type in the three words, Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness. If you choose to do that before you're done typing the word forgiveness, you'll see the glowing heart icon. And if you choose to tap on that, it will let you download a completely free and private app that contains the Reality Management Worksheet. It also contains a version of an abbreviated version of that process and a copy of the Dragon Klingon game and the tools of the commitments, and it gives you the option to ask a question at any point in the app, and it will get emailed to Jeannie, and then she'll get back to you. So it's an amazing set of tools that are available absolutely free. There's also a list of audio files you can download of shows just like this one where people have called in and been stepped through the worksheet process. And if you choose to listen to those, they can serve as a tutorial for you so that you can get maximum benefits from this set of tools in the shortest period of time possible. We hope people do all of that soon and often, primarily because it tends to improve the quality of people's lives and relationships when they apply these tools in their life. And secondarily, because it's been our experience that the more people do that, the more it prompts, stimulates comments, questions, answers, and testimonials. So if you have any comments, questions, answers, or testimonials for us, we encourage you to give us a call at 563-999-3581. If you call that number and press 1, it will put the little icon of a hand by your phone number. I'll turn on the microphone and announce you by your area code. And if you're not listening live, if you are not willing or able to call us directly, you can send an email. You can email me at tjh@mindshifters-academy.org, and or you can email Jeannie at jeannie@whyagain.org. That's whyagain.org. And if we get the emails from you, we will address your comment or question or answer or testimonial in the radio show. And then if time allows, we will send you a note about when, what day, and what time your email was addressed. So you can listen back through the archives. And that's a really good opportunity to mention that the archives are there as a free resource, the archives of almost every show we've done since starting this internet show back in 2011 in January. And we encourage people to use that as a resource. Go back and listen to shows. If something that really interesting sparks your curiosity or helps you in some way and you want to send that to somebody else, just click the link and send it to download the file or the link to the file and send it off to a friend or family member and spread the use of the tools. So again, our call-in number is 563-999-3581. If you call that number and press 1, we can have a conversation. How can we support you? What's on your mind today? Today is Friday. We had our support group last night. We listened to a little bit of the Michael Singer lecture on his book, or relating to the concepts in his book, The Untethered Soul. And we had animated discussion about these tools. We I mentioned yesterday in the show that I had listened to part of the, or watched part of the documentary titled Stutz, S-T-U-T-Z, on Netflix. I don't promote a lot of things that people have to go out and spend more money on. And so if you don't have a Netflix account, this isn't going to be of any use to you. But if you already have Netflix, as many people do, there's a documentary by the actor, I think he's like 33 years old when he created this documentary, or started it, Jonah Hill. And he had been in therapy for quite some time. I believe he's still actively in therapy with his therapist, who is, I think, a psychiatrist. I think he didn't say it specifically, but from the context of their conversations, I believe he became a psychiatrist. And instead of doing what most psychiatrists today do, which is just write medications, this gentleman, Phil Stutz, has done the work to learn how to do therapy the way many psychiatrists did in the past, except he's not doing the old type of psychoanalytic therapy where he just sits out of view of the patient and lets them free associate and nods and grunts. So I've now watched the rest of the documentary, and I can wholeheartedly recommend it. If I didn't know any better, I'd say that Phil Stutz has read The Way of Mastery and has been a student of Guy Finley's and Krishnamurti and Buddha and, you know, on and on and on. It's as I mentioned before, there are several things he mentions just in the first 50 minutes that sound like they come right out of the bottom line observations list that I give to patients in a first or second session. And he actually stepped Jonah through an exercise which is almost exactly the exercise of the Gentle Art of Blessing from Pierre Pratervand. And when Stutz Phil, I think is his name, when Phil Stutz talks about the X factor, he's basically talking about what Guy Finley calls the mechanical level of mind that just keeps churning away, doing all of these things, throwing up negativity, et cetera, and arises from every negative reaction we have. It's almost exactly what Dr. Michael Rice calls the 9-bit mind. It's the concepts and the, quote, tools, close quotes, that he recommends are very solid, and they're very much in line with the core of the work I do with patients on a regular basis, and they're in alignment with what we're teaching, what we're learning from reading The Way of Mastery, and what we saw last year when we worked through The Course in Miracles. So, if you're not lucky enough to have your own therapist, or if you know somebody who just can't afford a therapist, there are some really good, solid ideas in this work, and they're very much some of the exercises, visualizations that he gives . I imagine that for some people, they won't get much out of them unless they've developed a relationship with a therapist and they feel safe enough to look at some of the scariest things in their life. But for a lot of people who fall within that normal range of ego strength and not tremendously traumatic childhoods, they can take these tools and practice these exercises to great effect in their life. So again, that's a documentary created by Jonah Hill on Netflix, and it's simply titled Stutz, S-T-U-T-Z, because that's the therapist's last name. So since nobody has a hand up and since we began yesterday a review of Lesson 31, I will get back to the reading. And please feel free to put a hand up at any time during the reading. Even if I'm in the middle of something, 563-999-3581 is the number. And Lesson 31 in The Way of Mastery is titled Placing Your Trust in Love, Trust and Loyalty in Love. And this book is already telling us that as we abide in the physical world, the greatest challenge that we have moment to moment and moment to moment is to be vigilant against identifying with the perceptions which are born and birthed as a result of the physical apparatus of the body itself. Just the other day in Michael's portion of the show, he was going on and on again about the page on a CIA website where they talk about perception, and they're talking about how the research shows without any doubt that my perception, your perception, anyone's process of perception does not record reality. It constructs the reality, your internal experience. Your mind is going to make up pictures and give them meaning. Your mind is going to hear the vibrations that hit the ear and turn them into sounds and convince you that you heard what you heard. And it's done that, it's doing that because it's been practiced and trained and conditioned to do that. In a Neil Seth video, he points out that when your brain shows you a picture and tries to convince you that it's coming from the world outside of you right now, only 20% of the data or the information that's coming in by light hitting your eyes, only 20% of that is going into making up the picture you see. The other 80% of it comes from your past experiences. comes from your comparing the stimulation that's hitting your eyes and your ears and your senses right now with other events in the past and the way you've been trained to label them and give them meaning. Trained or conditioned either by the culture or your parents or by your own life experience. So this chapter is, you know, it just slips it in here. It's the same work of Anil Seth and Bruce Lipton and Candace Pert and the researchers for the CIA that are trying to get really clear about the process of perception so that their agents in the field can get the highest quality information to report back to them. All of that's tucked away in here in Lesson 31 where it says, as you abide in your physical world, that means each and every one of us listening to this right now, the greatest challenge that we are going to have, and this is a challenge we face moment to moment and moment to moment, the challenge we have is to be vigilant against identifying with the perceptions that our mind shows us. Because the perceptions our mind shows us are not the actuality of life. Those perceptions are born and birthed as a result of the physical apparatus of the body itself. The text goes on and says, that is, you look out through a body because that's where your attention seems to be. And your apparatus, called the eye, immediately shows you a world of objects that are separated by space. And yet, all of our greatest scientists tell us there is nothing separate. Everything is energy and all energy is connected, et cetera, et cetera. And so the text goes on and says, if you identify with that level of perception, you can only conclude that you are separate from one another. When you see events happening, it is absolutely impossible to see the subtle interconnection of all events. Now, if we slow that down and read that again, this book is saying there is a subtle but powerful interconnection of all events. A little bit later on, it talks about the universe, meaning the one thing, the unified experience of life, the one turning, the one existence. So it says, when you see events happening, when you're brain uses the input from your eyes and creates pictures and tries to convince you that that's what's going on outside of you, it makes it impossible if we rely only on our physical senses. It remains impossible to see the interconnection of all events. And then you fall into the trap of forgetting that you live in the universe. The universe simply means one turning. Or one song, or one event occurring. Just like an ocean is but one event, expressing as many waves. So too do all events in the field of space and time, in the field of physical matter, all these events merely emerge from that one energy. That one universe, that one experience, that one event. The text goes on and says, from the body's level of perception, the thinking mind, in association with the body, creates interpretations of what it believes it is seeing. And now, your attention, your awareness is already twice removed from actuality. First, you become hoodwinked, thinking that what the body's eyes show you is what is truly real and significant. For instance, you love someone. They are here today, and tomorrow they leave. You see them pack their things, and their body leaves. And your eyes show you that they are, quote, gone, close quotes. And then the mind says, ah, woe is me. I've lost my love, close quotes. Neither of these is true. The soul, at the level which reality is far deeper than the level of the body, the soul can never go anywhere. No one you've ever met or known can ever be outside of your heart through his or her own action. The mind-body, yes, it can leave. But that is not what makes, what takes that person out of your heart. It can only be your decision to withdraw the energy of love, your attention, your awareness from that person. It is only the withdrawing of love that creates the experience of separation in the experience of your awareness. So now you are sitting two levels removed from reality or actuality. First, you've become hoodwinked, thinking that the physical eyes show you what is true. Then you draw conclusions and create interpretations of the events that the body's eyes show you. This creates the emotional effect that's like a soup that runs through you and around you, and it will remain so until it is healed. The third level of being removed from reality or actuality is the trick of the mind in which it insists that its interpretations are fact. It is to this level of mind that I once asked of a Course in A Course in Miracles, I asked, quote, would you rather be right or happy, close quotes. For happiness can only be the result of perfect trust. And perfect trust emerges from perfect loyalty. And perfect loyalty emerges spontaneously in the mind that has rested in surrender. So why would I have perfect loyalty emerge spontaneously in my mind if I surrender? Because in this work, this word surrender means at one and the same time recognizing that I don't know what anything is or is for. I don't know when I was created or how I was created or by who or what. I don't know what any of my brothers and sisters need. At the same time that's true, I ask to be taught by life, by the flow of life, by the creative energy, by the one mind, whatever you want, just ask to be taught. That's what they mean by surrender. And when I surrender to be taught, perfect loyalty emerges spontaneously. When I stay in direct relationship to what is without pouring a lot of mental energy into believing what I think I've been taught, what should be, what my eyes tell me, etc., which frequently turns to resistance and fear and negative emotional states that abound, when I surrender, I give that up. I release my attachment to those things, and I ask to be taught. So the text goes on and says, we've spoken often of the keys to the kingdom. They are desire, intention, allowance, and surrender. In allowance, you go through a period of deep undoing in which you disconnect the wiring in your mind, in your thought process, which has led you to insist on the rightness of the interpretations you have created. And then you've linked those interpretations to the events that the physical body-mind has perceived. In allowance, you go through a period. It doesn't happen instantaneously overnight. You practice watching for the earliest warning signs of tension, tightness, resistance, rejection, and you release those tensions, those tightnesses, those resistance, those rejections. And when you release the tension and the tightness and the pushing things away or the grabbing for certain things, then what sweeps in, what what's left is allowance, a state of openness. So as allowance is perfected, the text goes on and says, so as allowance is perfected, one has come to see that their whole world, everything they have constructed, has been undone. That is, your perception of belief, your perception of your feeling nature, your perception of what is, has been undone. The mind, as it was, is unraveled. Now, of course, the perception of the body-mind goes on. The physical eyes seem to show you that there is someone in another body over there, and that they are doing what they are doing, and that you are doing what you are doing, so there cannot be any connection. That level does go on as long as there is a body. However, the mind that is healing does not identify that as the primary level of reality. The mind that is healing understands that its perception is self-created. The mind that is healing asks to be shown the underlying energies, what this book at an earlier point called the shimmering radiance of the creative energy expressing in form. The text goes on and says, so as allowance surrenders the construct that has been made up in the mind, and by the way, that construct doesn't exist anywhere but in the mind that made it up. As allowance surrenders that construct, the mind rests in an unobstructed allowance of how the body-mind goes through its days until it turns to dust. There's no longer any kind of being hoodwinked. There's no longer being attached, no longer being swept up with that level of identification, because there's no longer a need to identify with the interpretations. And happily, there is no longer any need to be right. There's no urge to argue with people. There's no urge to fight with the events and the flow of life. There's only being awake and aware in the flow of life, where you can be an active participant and choose for love in each new present moment. The text goes on and says, as allowance comes to completion, something quite magical occurs. It is beyond all comprehension of the thinking mind. Your ego could never comprehend this. It is as though something that has existed because it was contracted in fear, dies and dissolves like the mist before a rising sun. And all that is left is the quiet spaciousness in which awareness has been purified. Now, I know I mentioned this the last time we read through this, but this is critically important. As allowance, if I practice allowance, if I spend more and more days focused on awareness of the first warning signs of upset and tension and denial and resistance and rejecting the lessons of life or rejecting the way life is unfolding, the more I practice catching the early warning signs that that's happening as a reflex in me and releasing it, breathing through it, releasing my attachment to those thoughts that say this is bad, this is wrong, that over there is right, I release any energy, any of my mind energy that I've been pouring into the need to be right or to argue for my position. The more I do that over time, allowance comes to completion, and as it does, something quite magical happens. And please listen to this next line. Please dig a little deeper to understand. At a felt sense level, at a heart level, at an unconscious level, what does it mean when it says something quite magical occurs that is beyond all comprehension of your thinking mind? we all know what happens. Somebody speaks some words to us, and our mind starts racing off thinking it understands it or questioning it because it doesn't understand it, and the mind wants to have words for it, and it wants to have an association with things it's done in the past so it knows that it's safe. And what this is saying is the part of your mind that knows what a word is, that gives a meaning to a word like love or tree or bus or cup, that part of your mind will never comprehend what happens as allowance comes to completion. Please just do the exercises. Just read and sit with. Don't try to make this happen because you can't ever make it happen, which is why we were talking in the last lesson about the difference between making and creating. I can allow, if I allow, and I step into this flow of life, expressing in, through, as, and around me, and I get my conscious logical mind to just sit by the side until it's needed for some navigating of a car through a city, or how to get dressed in the morning, but I don't use it for the creation of my sense of self or my sense of connection or separation from the world. I allow the flow of creation and I experience it without all the thoughts about it, without all the labels and judging and weighing about it. Because what's going to happen as I practice that act of allowance, that process of watching for my earliest signs of resistance and tension and rejecting of the flow of life, and I release it, I release my attachment to it, what happens is going to be quite magical. And my conscious logical mind will be sitting in the corner sounding like this. And had no words for it. There won't be any words. There won't be any concepts. I won't be able to communicate it to somebody else. I won't be able to hold on to it. It will be moving, and I will be moving through it with it. All the thoughts I have about it, all the images, will dissipate like a mist before a rising sun. Everything that I thought I knew, all of the fears and contractions that I had, will fade away. The text goes on and says, events still arise and pass away. One continues to talk with their friends, perhaps as they always have. One notices the tendency in the body-mind to create interpretations. And some of them are quite necessary. For instance, quote, the light just turned red. My interpretation is that it might be wise to stop here, close quotes. But there is now something that is wrapped around all of that. So that what is arising is seen as ultimately quite inconsequential, quite innocent, and devoid of any deep value. This is how the title of Lesson 9 can be true. All events are neutral. That happens once allowance has moved to completion. I will understand that whatever unfolds in the area of form is quite inconsequential. All events are neutral means events are form, and I have been tuning my awareness to, I have been choosing to focus on content, and what the only content that is truly real is the energy of creation, the energy of love itself extending and expressing. The text goes on and says, for you will place your loyalty on what you have decided to value. And in that spaciousness, in that perfect stillness, in that deep peace, mind or my thought of myself as a person dissolves in surrender. Anyone who has awakened knows exactly what that feels like. Anyone who has begun to awaken has touched on moments of perfect surrender. For in surrender, the mind beholds that all things that are arising and passing away are perfectly harmless. They can hold no value because they abide in time. And the things of time are like the waves that arise from the ocean. Because they have a beginning, they will have an end. In their beginning, their end is certain. Only a fool would create loyalty to that which is temporary, temporal, and ultimately unfulfilling. But the wise of heart have decided to place their value on that which is eternal. And that can be, what is it that can be eternal except creation itself? And creation is but love. Therefore, in the way of the heart, and in the way of transformation, and now in the way of knowing, all that we have sought to share with you has been by design, to lead you to see that love, capital L love, that the energy of creation itself, that the flow of life in creation is the only thing worth valuing. Capital L love is unconditional. Capital L love merely extends its energy in order to abide in its own nature. And because creation itself is but love, as the mind disentangles itself from the perceptual level of the body-mind and from the interpretations selected and created in the mind and overlaid upon those events, and especially as it disentangles itself from the egoic need to be right about its makings, as all of that happens, that which you truly are, pure intelligence, pure infinite creative possibility, that shifts itself into being identified only with valuing love, capital L love. This is the same thing as saying, quote, I value only God. I value only creation. I value only the energy of life itself, which has given rise to me and everyone and everything. Close quotes. Then the soul begins to reawaken. The soul, this drop of pure light, which is pure intelligence, the soul begins to realize that to know creation itself, it must be creation itself. And since creation is only love, the soul desires to be only love, to remember its true nature as love in each moment. For in extending love as creation extends love, creation itself is known. As creation is known, the true self, capital S self, is realized and remembered. And in that moment, the dream of the dreamer is transcended. Therefore, indeed, beloved friends, my trust in you is perfect, for I have come to value only creation itself. My loyalty to you as offspring of the Creator stems from having received that enlightenment for myself, having awakened from the maze. What's the maze? The complex web of perceptions in the body-mind. It includes the interpretations that the body-mind places on events. It includes the ego's construct of what it feels, that what it feels, it is right about. Because I have dissolved all of that, I abide in pure devotion to what is truly real and perfectly unconditional, the presence of creation itself, which is the same as the presence of love. So the next section asks us to examine, where have you placed your loyalty? Indeed, then, look well to see what you have chosen to be loyal to. And if you have chosen to be loyal to something of the world, you've actually been using loyalty as a way to overcome fear. Think about it. I've often said that what is not love is only fear. In a state of love, there is no clinging. There is no denial. There is nothing obstructed in the nature of the body's experience. One renders unto Caesar that which is Caesar's. One sweats in the hot summer sun. One simply is where one is. But the mind, the essence of your identity, is as love. And all of the rest is superfluous. And so you find yourself in a maze of events called time and space. By this, I mean you find yourself going to a job. You find yourself in a certain third-dimensional relationship. But you are not hoodwinked into thinking that this place, this context, is the all. It is only an opportunity for you to be the one who extends love in the midst of that context, simply for the sake of knowing love. The career or the mate or the car or the garden or the boat can come and go, for whatever is begun in time ends in time. But your delight is in loving and embracing and being the field in which these events rise and fall. If you are loyal to a person, place, or thing, look well to see, is there underneath a fear that you have not yet been honest about? Are you being loyal in order to have this person, place, or thing approve of you and stay with you so that you get something that you want? And there is nothing wrong with that. Do not think that because you look and see, well, you know, the bottom line is I really like this job and the $120,000 a year it pays me. I really like the sense of security that gives me. Please don't think that if you have that thought, don't interpret that to mean that there is anything wrong. It doesn't mean you have to give it up and go live penniless on the street. What matters is that you become perfectly honest with what you're doing. And you withdraw the tendency to say, quote, well, I'm really doing this career because I believe that the product that we create is making a huge impact on the planet. I believe that we can really make things different. And besides, we give jobs and we give money to charities. That's why I'm here. Close quotes. This teaching says that's just nonsense. In the world, you will do what you do because of where you place your value. And this is why I have often said, quote, if you want to know truly what you idolize, what you are committed to, what you most deeply believe, merely look at where you are. Look at who you are with, and look at what you are doing with your time, and look at how you feel about it, and look at it very truthfully. Those that insist on saving up money for a rainy day are merely stating, I believe that there can be rainy days unless I do something to prevent it. Their trust has been placed in their power to manipulate and use the world to create what they perceive they must have. And it is very, very different than the trust of the one awakened in the Creator who knows that whatever arises and passes away in the field of space and time is inconsequential. Because that mind is so identified with being the presence of love that the body mind could contract cancer tomorrow and say, who cares? The mind that rests in freedom has learned to transfer trust and loyalty to love, capital L, love. That mind has come to enjoy the peace that comes with only loving. For what harm can come to the mind that simply loves? The mind who looks upon all things and sees its perfect innocence, and that mind that plays in the kingdom provided by that one's creator, the kingdom of the body-mind, the kingdom of space and time, the kingdom of the power to choose love over fear. This is why I suggest the following simple thought, quote, suffering comes from being identified with form, whether it be the body, a belief, a career, or a context of experience of any kind. For all experience comes and goes. Liberation and deep peace come from being identified with content, not form. By content, we simply mean the matrix or the source out of which all possibilities are possible. It is like a musician who comes to appreciate the field of silence out of which notes can arise in a certain sequential order in order to create a beautiful melody. If it were not for the silence between the notes, no song could ever have touched your heart. The matrix of love, which is the presence of creation, the pure intelligence, the field in which all things arise and pass away and never change, that field is like a canvas upon which the grand artist paints. But the master artist knows that without the canvas there is nothing. And therefore, the master artist honors the blank canvas first. The next section is titled, Limiting Beliefs Crumble as the Soul Awakens. And I get it. I think we've talked about this before. There's a part of our mind as we hear this that gets fear going right away. It's what's going to crumble? Am I going to crumble? Is everything I value going to crumble? What do you mean crumble? If everything's going to crumble, everything that I like and everything I want, everything I think I need to survive is going to crumble, why would I want to awaken? That's exactly what happens. That's exactly why many people choose not to awaken. That's exactly why many people turn away from teachings like this. Because of fear. There's only choosing for love or choosing for fear. They say it over and over again. Limiting beliefs naturally crumble. We don't have to work at crumbling them. We don't have to attack them. You don't have to attack your ego. We've said this many times. The ego is a very useful tool. All of these good, pure teachings are not about destroying the ego. They're just about seeing the ego, just like everything else, for what it truly is, and using it as the simple, very useful, but simple tool that it is, only when it's appropriate to use it, only for what it was designed to be used for. It is not your true nature. It is not designed to create the relationship between you and your creator and you and your brothers and sisters. It's just a very simple tool to help you navigate through the physical realm. And your attachment to it will crumble. Your limiting beliefs about yourself and about your ego will crumble as you awaken. And it's okay for it to crumble because that's not your true nature. It's not anything that holds any true value for you on a pathway like this. So the text goes on and says, loyalty and trust are significant things to ponder. There is a process of growth, of course, for each time you begin to see that what you have placed your trust in cannot really truly fulfill the soul, it is as though a structure crumbles. But it only crumbles when you truly see that it cannot fulfill your soul. And that only happens when you really want the fulfillment of your soul. So the question arises, okay, so what is actually occurring? Here's what's happening according to this work. You, as an infinite being, have merely realized that you've been hoodwinked. And then you are withdrawing value from what you placed your trust in. That feels like a crumbling. And it literally is a crumbling of the subtle level of energy that constructs the perceptual belief system about the nature of experience. For instance, to give you a simple example, if one believes that they must have coffee every morning in order to get going, and then later in life, for whatever reason, they come to see that they never needed it at all, they may go ahead and enjoy their coffee, but it will never be for the very same reason. The structure of belief will crumble, and they will literally see life differently. This happens so many times in people's lives, but we're not assisted in seeing the process. How many times have you heard of somebody who converts from one religion to another, or from a religious position to an atheistic position, or from an atheistic position to a religious? It happens all the time. We see that what we thought was true, that we thought we needed to fulfill us and fulfill our soul's expression, isn't working. And as we see that, it crumbles. The value that we place in it is withdrawn. And we see life differently. The text goes on and says, each and every one of you can pause this lesson right now and merely ponder, what structures of belief have crumbled in your life? Has it not always led to a sense of greater expansion, deeper wisdom, and a more certain knowing? Think about things like, some of us are young enough to remember when we believed in Santa Claus. We believed in the Tooth Fairy. We believed in the Easter Bunny. We believed somebody when they said, I'm from your government, I'm here to help you. We believed somebody when they said, the check's in the mail. And we've grown up and we've realized, you know what, those things are not always true. And the question here is, hasn't that always led to a deeper wisdom, an expansion, a more certain knowing? The text goes on and says, in other words, life proceeds from illusion to reality, or what Dr. Michael Rice would call actuality. And as the soul awakens, it literally feels a sense of expansion and growth. But the growth has nothing at all to do with the body getting bigger or the bank account growing or having more children. You all know that as wisdom is reawakened in the mind, there is a sense of growth. And that kind of growth becomes all attractive to you. It's the personal growth. It's the personal expansion. It's moving from illusion to actuality. It's a natural process that happens as we mature, as we experience things, as we release our perceptions about things and we learn to have the direct experience, those perceptions, those beliefs, those illusions crumble. And they crumble naturally. There's no effort involved. And the only thing that has attraction for us is growth, is that true knowledge, that direct experience, that ability to experience your true nature as love, and that's where we place our trust and our loyalty. That's the invitation in this chapter. And in order to do that, we have to be willing to examine, where is it we have been placing our loyalty and our trust? What is it that we have valued other than the direct experience of love. The next section asks us to choose to place our trust in the creative energy, in the love that birthed us. And we will continue the review of Lesson 31 on Monday. And we have a couple minutes left if anybody wants to chime in. I would take a moment to request from anybody who's on the line to send your loving thoughts and healing energies and blessings to the group member that we have who is recovering from a surgery on her brain yesterday to remove what we hope is a non-cancerous tumor. And just hold that person and her family in your mind light and healing and this energy of love and creation that we've been talking about. If you're so inclined, you can send the Pierre Pradervan Gentle Art of Blessing, or you can watch the documentary with Stutz, S-T-U-T-Z, on Netflix, and you can do the little visualization that he has in there, which is almost exactly the same as Pierre Pradervan's Gentle Art of Blessing, and send that loving energy to this group member and her family. Her children, her adult children. And when we come back on Monday, we will continue our review of Lesson 31. And we'll be happy to entertain comments or questions or answers or testimonials for an extended period on Monday before getting back into the reading, if that's what people are interested in. In the meantime, I'll remind us all that we come from love. We're made of this stuff we call love. We actually are love, the energy of creation expressing in form, and everything else is false. Welcome, Jeannie Rice.
Thank you, Dr. Tim. I hope you have a really good weekend.
Thank you. Same to you. Blessings.
Thanks. All righty. So welcome, everybody, to the second hour of Mindshifters Radio, and today is Friday. And it is December the 9th, 2022. And our call-in number is 563-999-3581. And press 1. That puts you in queue to talk to us. We'd love to hear your comments and questions because that makes this your show. And we'd sure like for it to be your show and answering your questions instead of doing a monologue. I know sometimes Michael has a full hour of information to pass on to us, but then other times it's a brief intro, and it would really help if you would call in and ask your questions. I think we are supposed to have a couple people call in today, and so we'll give Michael just a minute to dial in. I'll also invite you to go to the website. I know I've done this every day, but if you go to whyagain.org and click on the Start Here button, you will see the first thing that pops up then under the Start Here, it are two videos that we have done. One of them will help you navigate the website, show you where some of the main features are when you first go to whyagain.org. And then the second video is on the Forgiveness app. And I actually walked through two of the worksheets, the abbreviated worksheet and then the Dragon Klingon game, and give examples of how to fill it out on the app on your phone. And so go out and visit that and check it out. And I'll let everybody know that tomorrow, which is Saturday, December the 10th, we will be having Mindshifters and Stillpoint Breathing. We have several new people that have signed up for that tomorrow. And if you're interested in being part of it, please give Michael or I a call or drop us an email. Let us know, and we will get you set up to be part of that tomorrow. And we send you a link to do it by Zoom. We send you a picture showing you how to set up your camera so that we can watch you as you're breathing, and send you the mind shifters to work on, as well as two videos to watch prior to. So if you're interested in that, let me know today. You can, if you've got my number, you can call me, you can contact me through the website, or you can drop me an email at Jeannie, J-E-A-N-I-E, at whyagain.org, and we will get you signed up to be part of that. Michael, have we gotten the video yet from, excuse me, from the book club yesterday?
No, we haven't gotten the video from the book club, and we haven't gotten the video from the interview that I did yesterday with the medical group up in Kingsport, but anticipating them at any moment, and I'll make sure as soon as I see either of those links, I'll get them to you so we can get them on YouTube and get them on Vimeo and rock and roll. Had two really good conversations yesterday. We did chapters 17, 18, and 19 in the book, looking at the has-been, you know, the mind being the content of the past, carbon-based memory, and healing crisis, what that means, why willingness is required. It was a really good interactive show with Yinka, and we appreciate everything that she's doing. She did a really nice job of the PowerPoint presentation to go along with the study. Each chapter is really creative in that way and has some nice skills, and she comes up with some of the best pictures and cartoons to represent the principles and the points. So much appreciation to Yinka. And it'll be another second Thursday in January before we get to do it again. Is that true?
We'll be doing it again.
We'll be doing it. What date is the...
The 22nd is the fourth Thursday.
Oh, yeah, we'll do the 22nd. Yeah, we'll go ahead with that. It's far enough away from Christmas, so we'll be able to rock and roll with that. And then the conversation with Ben from this alternative medical practice up in Kingsport went really, really nicely. He's the CEO of the company. His father is the medical doctor, and so he's more of the business end of their medical practice. But he's getting more deeply engaged in the conversation of understanding how this energy system called a body mind works and how to bring healing to it. And so, definitely a gift conversation in his inquiring mind, his questioning. You know, each person that's out there who has a question, you know, they've wandered in areas that, you know, perhaps my mind has never thought of treading. And so come up with questions to take us into an arena that, you know, we haven't extended the work before. So it's a real gift when people, especially new people, know nothing about it. Sometimes people say, I don't even know what question to ask. Well, whatever question you've got. Well, but this one's so silly. No, actually each one is a gift that takes us into an arena that, you know, oftentimes opens whole new aspects of the work, whole new processes, both externally and internally. For everybody involved. So if you've got questions, we appreciate that you push one and come forward with your question. And how can we serve you? How can we support you? Been realizing with the research and work I've been doing on emotions, kind of a new piece of the puzzle for me opening up. And to recognize, you know, if we go back to the opening words in the book of John, that says, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word became flesh, according to the Greeks. But in Aramaic, it says, in the beginning was the mind energy, and the mind energy became flesh. And to realize the literal truth of that, that when we think a thought, that thought becomes a neuropeptide, becomes an actual molecule, a literal energetic pattern, so to speak, that becomes integrated into our physiology. You know, as Bruce Lipton is showing in his cell biologist laboratory, that thought becomes a neuropeptide that then lands on a cell and integrates itself into the cell, literally inserts itself. And realizing that when there's a thought we don't want to deal with, when there's a thought moving in the mind, and you know, so often when people start doing worksheets, it's like, I never even realized I had such a thought in my mind. people are so dissociated from what's going on inside themselves, and they wonder why they're suffering. And when we hold the breath, when we lock something down, when I don't want to deal with this, it's like taking a coil spring on a car. And, you know, the idea of the coil spring on your car is you're driving along the road and you hit a bumpy road, and that spring absorbs the shock, along, of course, with the shock absorber. But the spring itself takes some of the energy of that pothole that you hit, and it compresses and then expands again to level out the what would otherwise be a horrific bump. Well, when we engage in a frequency pattern, it's like that coil spring, and when there's something we don't want to look at and we push it down, we literally lock energy into it. And what occurred to me this morning as I was sort of contemplating this is that the emotion is like the sound that comes. If you've ever been out on a windy road where there's a power line, a long power line, and the power line starts to hum, creates a vibration that you can hear, this low humming sound. Well, that's what emotions are. It's informing us of the quality of energy that we're engaging in, and if it's a wondrous emotion, joyful aliveness, excitement, what that hum, what that reflection we call an emotion is telling us is, this is it. This is the mind energy you want to be on track with. This is what will uplift you and heal you and bring you to the place you want to live. On the other hand, if that energy that we're compressing, that spring that we're compressing, and of course its compression means it's holding energy, if that emotion is hate, fear, rage, guilt, grief, I don't want to deal with that. I don't want to feel that. Well, we just guaranteed that we're going to continue to feel it forever, but we'll search for ways to anesthetize ourselves against that feeling, against hearing that hum, so to speak, that comes from those wires, that compressed energetic pattern that we hold down that becomes a creative force in our lives. You know, probably the greatest atrocity done to us as human beings down through the ages and that we've bought into is that we've had hidden from us the fact that we are by nature creators. And when we realize that, we get to select, we get to choose what energetic patterns, what thoughts we're going to engage in, and therefore what kind of emotions are going to come from it. Or if there are thoughts we've hidden from, denied and dissociated from the past, because they're perhaps painful, they're too much for the mind to want to handle, then the emotions become more deeply painful, the hum, the resonance that comes from that compressed energy in us speaks louder and louder and louder. And of course, the person who's not going to deal with it, you know, seeks for more and more toxic ways to dissociate from it. You know, that's where alcohol and drugs and junk food come in. Or retreat, you know, escape. No, I'm going to get away from you because if I'm around you, I have to feel this and I don't want to feel this. And so separation happens in relationships. Poor choices are made because when one has a toxic energy that's running within their structure, that is, they've got a negative emotion going on, the mind has its intelligence reduced. And that's where poor choices come in. And so it becomes a cycle for people. A poor choice is made, toxic mind energy flows from it. The emotion that comes from it is painful, hurtful. Give me a fifth of scotch. Well, you know, what a fifth of scotch does is alcohol knocks out inhibitors in the brain, which means that behaviors, choices we wouldn't make, things we wouldn't do, decisions we'd never touch, all of a sudden start to resonate and move. And those things that we've said previously, no, I'm not going there, all of a sudden the inhibitors are knocked out. A great deal of the function of the human mind is inhibitory. The firing of brain cells is designed to keep things at a threshold where, no, this one is not going to fire. And so when one avoids dealing with those things, poor choices are made and a whole different cycle of disintegrative energy is engaged, and it just becomes a downward spiral until somebody goes, oh, I didn't know there was a way to do anything about this. I thought that's just, you know, I was stuck here. And if there's a huge load of this mind energy that one has not dealt with, you know, forever in their lives, starting to open that veil of the temple and starting to look in there is so, brings up so much fear that most people just retreat from it. And in the meantime, by retreating from it, and the way they retreat is by stuffing it down, more toxic energy is put into the cell, and more of the cells in the structure yell and scream in hurt and pain and say, what are you doing to me? But if we live in denial, if we hold this mindset, you know, I've talked several times in the last few weeks about this new, or not new, this ancient one-world religion of blame. If we live in that religion of blame, yeah, well, I'm feeling this because of this person, and that because of that person, and that because of that, and this because of you and them, you know, that's the problem. Never once realizing it's my own mind that's producing the experience of my emotions that I'm trying to avoid. And sadly, people try many things to attempt to deal with issues like this. And, you know, as they said in the ancient teachings, you know, very few are those who will find the gate. So people try over and over and over. And, you know, oftentimes they try under the influence of things like alcohol and drugs or a sugar stupor. You know, just the mind being in that sugar rush, and try to deal with things and come to the conclusion that, well, you know, nothing works. It can't be done. And then when the real tools show up, the possibility of doing the work, the person who said, well, I've tried everything and nothing works, applies that to, here's a set of tools that actually work. You know, last night in the Hear My Voice book club, there's a young lady that has been, a woman who's probably in her mid-70s, who's been on the conference call, the Zoom link with that from the first show. And her first conversations, she actually asked questions. We did a worksheet with her. And the level of trauma this woman was living in, trauma over her children, trauma over her relationship with her mother from childhood, a pitiful conversation, one that just, you know, rips at your heartstrings, like, wow, how could somebody live with such confusion and pain? And that was, I don't know, how long have we been doing the do you remember, Jeannie, just when we started the book club? Let's see, we're on chapter 21.
Yeah, I think
21.
You actually just finished 19, 20, and 21. And the very first one that we did was March.
So that's at least 7, 8 months.
But that session, March the 10th, wasn't recorded. That was the first one. And then it was like, this is so powerful, we've got to have recordings for this. So actually,
okay,
I believe you did March the 3rd introduction of it and then began with the book on March the 10th.
Okay, so 9 months of it. So
yeah.
She was in that first one. And last night, she actually really began to work with the tools. Grady did a support group with some of the people, did several sessions with them on worksheets, and she participated. And she started her own group working with worksheets. And this woman that 9 months ago was just, I mean, if you listened to her conversation and her confusion and her trauma, it was like, just, oh my God, how can anybody live that way? And last night she put her hand up when we asked her questions. She said, I just wanted to let you know that, you know, even though my son recently died and 2 weeks ago my mother died and I had all this trauma, she said, I'm fine. I'm at peace. And it was just like such a transformation in 9 months because she was willing to move through her confusion, through her denial, and to actually let herself open up those things that she was, without realizing it, keeping herself in trauma with. And, of course, it's superbly rewarding when somebody, you know, moves things at that level and opens to the fact, the understanding, and the experience of themselves as active present love, even though they've lived a whole, in this case, a whole long lifetime being told what's wrong with them and what's bad about them. And I mean, in 9 short months, I mean, to listen, I've actually thought about, gee, it would be interesting to go back and get the first snippets of the first 2 or 3 shows or study groups that we did where she spoke, have those clips, and then hear her voice last night saying, I just want to let you know, I'm doing okay. It's like, wow. What a sweet shift. In any event, that's the beauty of having the tools and the willingness to step in. Even if you come to the conclusion that nothing can work. You know, it's just so profoundly amazing. And it doesn't matter where you've been. It doesn't matter what you've been through. You know, probably one of the most dramatic experiences that Ginny and I have had in terms of getting feedback on the work. We were in Hawaii several years ago. We actually took our kids on a trip there, and we had planned it so that we could, you know, in terms of handling the expense of it, we could stay in Hawaii, and we spoke at 2 or 3 different locations. We spoke on Maui, we spoke on Oahu, we spoke on the Big Island, and did workshops. And the first week we were on Oahu, and we spoke at the Unity Center in Diamond Head, and we did a full week of workshops, and the response was just wonderful. And we don't usually do a series of workshops and then go back to the same place, you know, a month and a half later. However, you know, the powers that be at Unity Center there contacted us, knew that we were staying to play, you know, to speak in other places and have some playtime. And so they contacted us and said, you know, we had such a nice response from you being here, and I know you're going to be here for a while longer. It's been years since you've been in Hawaii. Would you mind doing another week of workshops? And it's like, well, oh boy, you know, we're now into February. It was kind of tough because we had to really think about, gee, do we want to stay an extra couple of weeks in Hawaii in February or go back to Missouri? It's like, oh, okay, we'll stay. In any event, the upshot of that whole event was that when we did that second series, of the Sunday morning that we spoke there and did the Why Is This Happening to Me Again workshop in the afternoon, it had only been, I don't remember exactly, 6 weeks, 7 weeks, something like that. And we had 3 different people come to us that second Sunday, the 6-7 week differential between the 3 different people that came to us and told us that the first week that we spoke, they had come to church on that Sunday, and they were planning their suicide, that was going to be their last visit to this church that they went to, because they were going to kill themselves. 3 different people came to us in that second series. And it was like, well, I still got a lot of stuff in my life, but I now realize what was behind this desire to kill myself. And I'm so glad I didn't, because I'm in delight about my life. Yeah, I still got stuff to work through, but it was like conversations with three different people that were filled with such hope for their future instead of the hopelessness that leads one to suicide. So it's pretty amazing to get to work with people in those circumstances and to have the blessing of, you know, for me, kind of accidentally and partially purposely and of choice, moved from the business world, you know, 45 or 46 years ago into, you know, going back to school and doing this work full time. It was a matter of sort of choice and sort of circumstance, but I feel so blessed that I was given that gift and that opportunity and the impact that we get to make in people's lives. So we hope that we're having that kind of an impact in your life. And if there's any way we can support you, if there is any, you know, question about any of the tools that we teach, the how-to, or issues in general that you just need support with, that's what we're here for. That's what this radio show is about. And if you're on one of those stations where we can't see you in our control panel, our call-in number is 563-999-3581. If you call that number, 563-999-3581, you'll be listening to the show directly on your phone. And then if you push 1, that will raise a hand in the control panel, and Jeannie will know that you want to talk with us. So, Ms. Jeannie, do we have anybody out there with a hand up in the phone queue or anything happening in the chat room?
No hands up and no questions in the chat room. However, I just got an email from a young lady, and I would like to read it. I think it's awesome.
Please.
It says, "Hi, Jeannie and Michael. I hope this message finds you well. I am a member of Yinka's Book Club. I was introduced to Why Is This Happening to Me Again and did a worksheet during a club session. However, it was not until I watched Michael's full workshop and joined him in a live session just a day before that I came to realize how important these tools are for everyone, especially in this day and age. When I started reading Why Is This Happening to Me Again this morning, it occurred to me that why not translate it into my mother tongue so that it's known by people there as well. As Michael mentioned in the live session, the burnout culture is currently prevalent in contemporary America, but the case is much worse in China. It would be difficult to imagine just how many people in the country are planning to escape, quote unquote, from it because of the toxic social atmosphere there. To be honest, I was still struggling to apply for a master's degree before watching Michael's workshops, simply because of the wish of my parents who insist that I would otherwise risk being unemployed with just a bachelor's, given the unfathomably competitive job market in China. After completing a worksheet on this issue and letting go of my ultimate goal of being employed in this case, I feel so much relief and I started to enjoy my life now. I sincerely appreciate the inspiration from Michael." I noticed.
Wow.
I noticed the book has been translated in several languages, which is amazing, but it's not yet available in Chinese. I would like to know if it's possible for me to take that job. I would be honored to do so. Thank you for your time. And I'm looking forward to your reply. Her name
wow.
is Catherine Liu.
Wow, that's awesome. Doesn't get better than this, does it, honey?
I know.
Well, it sure opens my breath. So let's communicate with Catherine, and let's make sure we get the latest version of the book to her so that she can translate. That'd be awesome. I mean, what are there in China? 300, 3 billion people? Almost half of the world's population. Wow. Well, I'm breathing with you on that letter. Much appreciation for that note, Catherine. And that would be awesome to get the book into Chinese. And, of course, we'll acknowledge you as we put it on the website for doing the translation, and we'll get some materials to you. And, you know, chapter by chapter, as you get it complete, we'll put it on the website and see it becoming available throughout the whole culture of China. That would be just amazing. And, of course, anywhere else in the world. That I know there are many languages in China. I don't know if there's, I'm not that familiar with the languages there, whether there's one that most everybody speaks, whether it's Mandarin or, in any event, that would be just awesome. That would be awesome. Thanks for reading that, sweetie. Didn't realize we'd received
and
that.
And you have, I'm not sure that I've got the most recent with your editions and all, so I'll tell her to look for an email from you.
Yes. Yes.
Okay. And I told her to first translate the worksheet, and then as she got each chapter, that I would post them individually, that we didn't have to wait until she did the whole book. So,
right.
And that I would acknowledge
maybe she could.
So I'd already mentioned that.
Yeah, she could do the worksheet and maybe the commitment as well. It'd be nice to have that in Chinese as well. First person, maybe the My Promise from the Healing Children, Loving Children. Some of the children's tools, that'd be just fabulous. Yay. All right. Well, show's over. That's enough for one day. No, just kidding. Just kidding. We've got, I'm better than a half an hour left yet, so it's time
and
for a conversation.
The commitment is already in Chinese, so I'll just tell her to check
it
and make sure that it's the most recent version. Yeah, the commitment's actually in Chinese, Dutch, French, German, Greek, Hungarian, Italian, Japanese, Russian, Spanish, Swedish, and Thai.
You know, I'm remembering, I think that, let's see, what's his name in South Florida? Barry. I think Barry had a friend that was Chinese that he sent it to and got it translated, if I remember correctly. Anyway, that's awesome. I didn't realize it wasn't Chinese. But very cool. Very exciting. Well, I hope that inspires everybody who's listening as much as it inspires me. One of the things I've been looking at is how we're going to be able to archive everything. You know, the 20,000-page website is not cheap to have on the web. And 4,000 hours of radio shows and hundreds of hours of video that we set it up in a way that it's available in perpetuity. Which, if you're not familiar with that term, in perpetuity means forever. It means will be available globally to anybody. You know, one of the things I appreciate about this Blog Talk Radio show is the technology they've put together, and they've made it reasonably priced enough. You know, we don't get paid to do this show. We pay to do it. But they've made it reasonably priced enough that we can do this 5 days a week and carry it on for years. And, you know, that anybody in the world who's got an internet connection can be part of this conversation and can access these tools. It's just like amazing that literally the energy, the understanding, the depth of possibility that comes from having the brain cells that go along with this first century Aramaic forgiveness work, that it's, I mean, we're getting close to critical mass. It's moving at such a rate around the globe. Pretty amazing. Now, it doesn't unfortunately mean millions are jumping on board to do the work, because, of course, doing the work means you got to start to be willing to look inside and deal with what's in there. And when you realize that, you know, I was talking earlier about these coiled energies, these compressed energies. When you realize that each energy that goes into our structure is stored holographically in every cell in the structure, including the genes, which means that when a child is conceived, every compressed, every coiled energy that each of those parents has in their life experience and the life experience of the generations before them get passed on to the child, passed on to the next generation. And when you comprehend the what we're really asking you to do, what we're really doing, is standing in the gap and being willing to look at, being willing to have resonate, being willing to embrace every compressed, dissociated energy from every generation in each of our bloodlines. And, you know, people talk about the state of the world and how traumatic it is. I'll just take a second, sweetie. You know, the state of the world and how traumatic it is. And the truth is that we're living in a pretty gentle, peaceful world today compared to what's gone on in history. And if you want to get a look at what's in your genes, I challenge you to look at what your ancestral history is. And, you know, there are documentaries out there now about just about every, you know, race and culture and atrocity that's happened in history. I mean, we've been currently, Jeannie and I have both been doing a whole lot of breathing in the evenings because we've chosen to watch a series called The Vikings. I think it's on Amazon, and I mean, we are breathing, we are going to sleep asking Rooka, clean up whatever this has resonated in us, but so often we'll look at each other and just like, I can hardly believe that any human being could ever have lived this way. But this is, you know, relatively faithful to the history. And if in your genes there's this Nordic history, watch that series and get some idea of what needs to be worked through. You know, we had someone who recommended a series called Versailles. And it goes pretty deeply into some of the European history and the way these people dealt with each other, the undercutting, the violence, the viciousness, the just outright putrid behavior toward each other. And if that's in your genes, it's something that needs to be looked at. You know, you look at the movie Quigley Down Under, and you look at what happened to what was done by what supposedly were human beings to the Aboriginal peoples, and you look at what the Aboriginals had to deal with, and beyond comprehension. And that's what's in the genes of our culture, you know, especially this melting pot of the United States, where we have, you know, I mean, if you look at the history of some of the things that have happened in Asia and South America, Central America, I mean, you just have to go back a couple of decades and look at what happened in Central America under Ronald Reagan with his knowledge and his criminal participation. I mean, the number of people that were just mercilessly slaughtered so that business could move in there and take over. And that's just, you know, that's within our lifetime. And I invite everybody to breathe if you're not breathing right now and recognize that what we're asking you to do, come the space of willingness to be able to embrace any or all of those energetic patterns from your generations allow those energetic patterns to decompose, or pardon me, I should say, decompress in you, and therefore be removed, be forgiven, literally, to be accessed, brought forward in the presence of love, and dealt with. I mean, it's a monumental task, yes, and it can be done. And it's amazing, you know, I refer back to what I was sharing with the young lady that was in the first book club 9 months ago. And what this woman has gone through and done in 9 months, I mean, it's world-changing. And each and every one of us has the capacity to make that kind of difference. Yeah, you got to face yourself. Yeah, you got to stop playing the game of victim. You got to stop playing the game of, you know, playing out your power person stuff and blaming everybody else for it. It takes courage. It takes responsibility. But when you can breathe into that, you can become such a powerful force on the earth that you will change lives forever. There's a wonderful thought in the Course in Miracles. It says, millions yet unborn will benefit from the work you do. It takes courage, and the support's here to do it, and the tools work. So, hey, it doesn't get better than that. So, Ms. Jeannie, you've got a caller for us?
We have two callers, actually.
Awesome.
And the first one is 770. It's Michael, I believe. Welcome.
Good afternoon, folks. How are you?
Hey, I'm rocking. How about you, young man?
Good, good. Thank you. Thank you.
How are things in Texas? Tejas.
Not bad. Not bad. A little rainy today. But it is warm, so I'm thankful for that.
So what's on your mind today? How can we serve you?
Well, thank you. I have been listening intently. And Wednesday, before we get deep into my thoughts, you had mentioned the chart, I believe Wednesday, about the naturopathic and thought disorders.
The physiological effects of emotional suppression. That's how it's listed on the website. So if you go to whyagain.org, actually, Jeannie's probably already accessing it and sending you a link. So
it's, yeah, and it's also in the notes for today.
Okay, thank you. Thank you. I looked, let's see, that day, and I didn't see it in the notes, and I marked it down, but I don't believe I've looked since. But you're putting it in for today?
Yes, sir.
Thank you, Jeannie. Thank you, thank you.
She's probably already sent you an email with the link, Michael.
Awesome. So
but it's powerful to look at that chart and see just how literally the endocrine system is loaded down with these energetic patterns.
Hmm.
And actually, Jeannie, would you be up for sharing a little bit about what you were doing this morning and what happened for you?
If I can.
I'll share it if you'd like.
Okay. Explain.
Okay.
We're supposed to take a gift today. Go ahead.
Yeah. So Jeannie's dad is in an assisted living facility because he got COVID back in December, and best we can tell, they didn't get on a bed for 11 days in the hospital. And if you're 89, which he was, and you got COVID, and you don't stand up for 11 days, and you've been using a walker for 3 years to get around, you don't walk again. And so he's not walking. He hasn't walked since December.
Hmm.
But he's doing well. And they had put a request in for a gift they're going to do like a party with people in the facility, and Santa's going to come and they're going to give everybody a gift. So they ask family members to bring a gift for each person. And I had happened to pick up a set of picture holders. One was a serving tray where you can put pictures under glass, and it's the theme of it is Bon Voyage. And there's there are a couple of coasters you can put pictures on and an alum. And I said, well, you know, that might be nice. We've got a moving album, a digital album that is in his room that he can look at, but he can't really handle it the way he could this. So I said, you know, maybe we put pictures in that. Jeannie has had some challenges in the past with blood sugar. She, you know, takes pretty clean care of it and watches it daily. And if you look at the pancreas and you look at that chart, what you'll see is that what loads the pancreas down in the way of a thought disorder, just a general pattern, not saying this is absolutely it, but what loads the pancreas down so that people have blood sugar problems is unresolved grief. So I had just happened to find this thing, and I thought it was kind of cool, and it was priced right, so I bought it. I said, well, maybe that would be one of the things we could take as a gift for him. And the theme of it was Bon Voyage. It was like, you know, for somebody, it's for showing pictures of a trip you've taken or what have you. And occasionally, like maybe three times in the last year, Jeannie, if Jeannie hasn't eaten by 11 o'clock, she has a blood sugar challenge. And so it's about 10:45, and she's been printing pictures off to put in this gift for him. And so we go downstairs about 10:45. We're going to have some breakfast. And I made something, and Jeannie started eating, and all of a sudden she was just like, I have to go lay down. My blood sugar's dropping. I'm in trouble. So she went and laid down, and I went in and, you know, did some energy field work with her and breathed a little bit. And so, you know, it just, the intuitive hit came to say, well, what's going on? What's happening emotionally? Has doing these pictures and putting them in this Bon Voyage been bringing something up for you? And she just broke into tears. And it's like, yeah, it's like we're saying goodbye to Dad. And the grief just poured out. And at this point, Jeannie's on the floor, and she's not getting up anytime soon because her blood sugar's just dropped so low. So we breathed a little bit and looked at the thoughts, did an emotional release on attachment to Dad. And within about 3 minutes, she was able to get up and bounce back and go finish eating and move on. But having dealt with that grief energy, the thoughts of loss around her dad, lay around the floor, literally. And so, you know, that chart, where does it start? What are the thought disorders in a general way that tend to lower put a load on the endocrine system that inhibits proper function? And so, you know, one of the things we've got on the chart are the kinds of thought disorders that generally run people's lives. And what I've found over the years is that most everybody who looks at that chart and realizes what part of their endocrine system isn't functioning properly, and it's like, oh my God, that's my story. That's what's going on for me. So it's a good roadmap if you've got physiological challenges to look at what kind of thought disorders need to be forgiven, you know, recognizing that there's no such thing as a body, you know, coming right back to Einstein. On such things as matter, we have been all wrong. What we have heretofore called matter is energy, energy whose vibrations have been so lowered as to be perceptible to the senses. There is no matter. You don't have a physical body. You have an energetic body. Your brain turns it into something that looks solid, but there's absolutely nothing solid about it. And when you allow thought disorders into different parts of the structure, then it creates a distortion of that part of the structure. And the eye looks at it as, you know, a twisted energy. Oh, this cell or this organ is diseased. But there's no such thing as a diseased organ because there's no such thing as an organ. But there is an expression of mind energy that when a thought disorder is locked into the tissue, it creates the appearance of distorted tissue, and therefore we call it physical disease. You remember the master teacher said, don't judge by appearances. Be careful, because what your eye shows you, what your brain generates as an appearance, is false. It's not the truth. We need to be looking at and understanding what's underneath it. And that chart is about understanding on another level what kinds of mind energy create what kinds of disorders. And in general, what sorts of things people would benefit from doing worksheets around to their lives. So you'll enjoy that chart with all the work that you've done with health and understanding the true work. So you'll have fun with that, I think.
Well, that is exciting. I appreciate the added thoughts and Jeannie, glad that things are going much better right now. Appreciate your work.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Yes, that is amazing. I knew it piqued my attention the other day, but it really has now. Moving forward, I at the takeoff from Wednesday with Doug, I so appreciate all the folks and their questions, but Doug's was closer to my heart with some things I've got coming up here in Texas. And In the realm of activism, I know that I think, if I remember correctly, some of your words from Wednesday were about holding darkness accountable. I'm not sure I heard or digested that properly, but where I'm going with the question is, how can we help in activism how can we engage in it without energizing or perpetuating the wrong energy?
Well, the bottom line of that is I'm paying attention to something that's happening in the world because I have some sort of an energy match with it. Generally speaking, I only have brain cells for it because I've been there, done that. There are two ways to come towards something that you've been there, done that. One is, been there, done that, I earned the T-shirt, I burned the T-shirt, and I've worked through it. So now I can look at that situation objectively. There aren't a lot of dissociated energetic patterns within myself that have me going, oh, that's so terrible. I'm so enraged by that. Of course, lying to myself that my rage could possibly be caused by that. If I'm enraged, I'm enraged for one reason only, there's rage in me. And so it isn't my business to do anything about what's happening out there. If what's happening out there resonates rage in me, my business, my work is to clean up my rage. So if I've cleaned up whatever disintegrative energies there are in me about however it is that I've been there, done that, then I can bring active present love to that circumstance and bring healing to that in the world. I can't bring healing to it if I'm running the other way. I can't bring healing to it if I'm raging about it. By raging about it, I'm adding to it. You know, remember Yeshua said, resist not evil. If you're fighting against something, you are an energetic contributor to whatever that something is, being more powerfully expressed in the world. It's all about energy. So the first order of business is I go inside me and I follow the directive that said, you must forgive from your heart the wrongs of your brother. Now, that isn't a bleeding heart statement. The heart is the unconscious. What he's saying there is, if in you there is rage about something your brother is doing, then you'll use your rage to build your perceptual construct of your brother, and you'll say, my brother enrages me, and you'll think it's about him. But the rage that one's feeling is about oneself. So what Yeshua is saying there is, you must go into your unconscious, your heart, and remove from there that which you put into your brain's image of your brother that has you believe the lie that your brother caused this in you. Mm-hmm. Having gone in and removed that energy, every uncoiled in myself, every, let's say, you know, usually when there's activism involved, it's some form of justice issue. You know, oftentimes people who are screaming and raging for justice are really doing nothing else but I want vengeance here. I want to get even. I want vengeance because it's what's unresolved in them. On the other hand, you can approach that same circumstance, identical situation. You see it because you've been there, done that, but you've worked through whatever it is that needs to be worked through. And you can stand as a space of active love while you go forward and hold that particular behavior in the world accountable. So your activism doesn't add energy to it on an unconscious level. Your activism brings active present love to it and brings healing. One of my early mentors, way back when we originally created Laws of Living, that course was actually created for the prison system in response to a request from a Superior Court judge in Albany, Georgia. The man's name was Asa D. Kelly. He had been the head of prisons for the state of Georgia for a time, and then he was appointed as a Superior Court judge. And Asa Kelly sent thousands of people to prison for years, decades, lifetime. He's probably one of the closest models I would have in the world of a saint, because he was a judge in the Superior Court in Albany, Georgia. I don't know if you know Albany, Georgia, but it's been described as a part, you know, the equivalent as a part of the body lower than the armpit of Georgia. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of, like, deliverance could have been made in Albany, Georgia. So Judge Kelly had a lot of pretty heinous crimes and criminals come before him. And in essence, what he'd say to this heinous criminal is, I love you like a brother, but you know, the community's taken up a collection and they built a building with bars around it. And they hired me to determine who's safe in the community and who isn't. And I honor my community. And you're not safe in the community, so I'm going to sentence you to life in prison. I'm not going to punish you, but I'm going to sentence you to life in prison to protect my community. And by the way, I actually talked to these guys over here, Dr. Michael Rice and Dr. Dan McDougald, and asked them to create a course to bring healing to you guys. So if you'd like, I will, as I sentence you to prison, I will also sentence you to Laws of Living. And we cut recidivism by over 90% with that course. Because it did for these people exactly what it is that we're talking about needs to be done. And that is to bring a healed mind to a situation that is unhealed. And the healed mind is so clear and so connected with love that it delivers healing even to the most heinous of crimes and criminals. And that's what the world needs. Elsewise, everybody hates the hater, you know. I mean, what does everybody want to do to the child abuser? Abuse them. Why do they want to abuse them? Because the reason they're attracted to the issue of child abuse is because they've been abused or they've been an abuser. That's the energy that is the hot energy that moves in them that attracts them to that issue. are you willing to heal that issue before you go try to fix it in somebody else? Because the person who hasn't healed it in themselves simply exacerbates the expression of the problem by going and trying to do something out of it, out of their own pain, unresolved rage, fear, grief, trauma, what have you.
Mm-hmm.
So we're saying, yes, take action. I mean, you know, you have somebody who contacts you and says, hey, guess what? I need some help. I'm getting ready. I've got the perfect crime. There's a bank, and I've got a way into the bank, and there's no possible way you can get caught. I just need somebody to help me out and drive the car, and we will walk away with $10 million. You want to come help me with that?
No.
So the person who lives in integrity says, thanks, not my job. However, I do get that out of my integrity, my job, and I don't know why you maybe need to spend the next 20 years in prison, but my job is to inform the police that this is about to happen and hold you accountable for that.
Mm-hmm.
And I do that with us most caring, connectedness and love. I don't know why you need to be in prison for the next 30 years, but I'm going to help put you there. But I'm going to do it out of a connected space of love in my heart and from a space of being rather than, why, you rotten thief, look what you're doing. You are.
Yeah, that would be
the person who's in that mode. Say again?
That would be perpetuating the problem.
Exactly. It's on an energetic level, it's adding energy to it. It's supporting it. By joining in the mind energy of trauma with trauma, it simply increases the trauma.
So
you know, it's like someone who goes to the funeral. Go ahead.
No, go ahead, please.
Well, I was going to say, it's like someone who goes to the funeral home and, you know, there's a friend there who's had someone die. And this individual, not having resolved anything about death in their own lives, goes to the funeral home to see their friend, and oh, it's so terrible, and commiserates, and they both go deeper into the pit of pain and trauma over this loss. Or do you go into the funeral home in a space of compassion and love, understanding there's a lot of energy to be processed, and having healed your own mind around the idea of death, are you the space that uplifts this person who's going through this trauma? It's the difference of night and day.
Mm-hmm.
What we can't be the energy of uplift for is first our work. Then go work on the issue. You know, I mean, you know, dedicate yourself, dedicate your life to it if that's what's appropriate. But if you do it out of your own pain, you just, the more work you do on it, that's where, again, Yeshua says resist not evil. The more work you do on it out of your own pain, the more you're a contributor to it.
So bottom line would be, nothing wrong with community activism if it's approached with a healed mind.
That's the idea. That's it. That would be one of the objectives of this work, is to bring each one who sees atrocities in the world and wants to take action to bring correction, that they're actually doing it out of their own corrected mind, not out of a traumatized mind that just exacerbates the problem.
So a community action group would be really benefited by first century Aramaic forgiveness.
About 10,000%. I don't know anybody on the planet. I mean, you know, the market's pretty big. It's probably only about 7.5 billion people, you know. Like, who doesn't need?
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yeah, because there's a lot of groups and things that just believe we don't need activism, and more than likely because of things you've discussed, as it's done wrongly, and it just gives the wrong negative energy and perpetuates the problem. But approaching it like this, as you've explained, makes all the sense to me. And
yeah, And we need that activism in the world, big time. The show's going to cut us off in a few seconds. Let's just go ahead. We'll forget the outro, but go ahead with your thoughts.
No, I appreciate that. Hopefully got some community meetings next week we're planning, and I will also present the Aramaic forgiveness problem. Aramaic forgiveness protocol, you know, just in general, and we'll see where that goes, and I'll be in touch.
Sweet. Well, any way we can support and assist, you know, I think I sent you to the link to the latest 3-hour Why Is This Happening to Me Again. That's the earlier in the show, the woman wrote that she had just watched that, and that just like turned the lights on for her. So that's available.
Yeah.
You know, show it to the group. The video is there to show people how to use the app, how to use the website, you know, and any way we can support. That's what we're here for.
That's wonderful. We certainly appreciate y'all. Thanks for clarifying that for me.
All right. Well, we'll look forward to our next conversation. And everybody, have the best year yet of your eternal lives. It's an awesome gift to give the world, and you have the power to do it, and the world sure needs it. Blessings.